Jacob, Jacob, Joe and Jacob. Agile monkeys play. Jacob, Jacob, Joe and Jacob. Agile, unpredictable Jacob.
Welcome. This is Jacob, podcast about agile lab and monkeys. I am Jacob and I have Joe with me. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Jacob. How you going?
Good. Tell me, where are we traveling today?
Today, we go to the magical land of Brazil.
Wow.
I know. And with us is Mario Mello. How you going, Mario?
Well, fine, Joe. What about you? Thanks. You just pronounced really, really right.
Oh, good. I've been practicing all morning. Mario, you come to us from Brazil. You've got a lot of projects on the go that we want to talk about, and we also want to learn a little bit about Brazil. But before we dive into what it's like to be an agilist in Brazil, can you tell us a little bit about what you do in Brazil?
Sure thing. Well, I'm a software developer, still am in my heart, at least. And I like to write code. I have a software development company here in Brazil. And I also work as a consultant for another company called Emergy. I give training, a lot of training about Scrum and Agile. I used to travel when it was possible before, right? I had a lot of classes in Portugal. We still have, but now online classes, which means that I just need to wake up way earlier than I do to be in Portugal time zone.
Excellent. And for our listeners who may not be familiar where exactly Brazil is on the map, can you paint us a picture?
Yeah, we are on the South America. So we have a lot of time zones in common with the East Coast of the United States, kind of the same time zone. Mm-hmm. We're a big country, really, really big country. We had a lot of different places in here, places that are cold, places that are hot, more hot place than cold place.
Yeah, I always like to say
kind of in the middle of them.
Oh, yep. And I like to say, like, if South America were pregnant, Brazil would be the bump.
Oh. That's a great analogy. It really, really looks like that. And the bump has the nicest beach in Brazil, is that part. You know, right. Really paradise there.
Wow.
Very nice. So you know, as we sort of jump from country to country, we like to explore some common questions, like when did Agile come to Brazil, particularly in full force? Like, when did it become a recognized way of approaching software delivery or any sort of delivery? And also, you know, what you've gotten to see of that as you've worked in your country as well.
Great. We started kind of early in here. You know, because there's this thing we call the Brazilian way, which sometimes sounds like a bad thing. Most of times we talk about that like it's a bad thing, which means trying to bend the rules a little bit and trying to do things a little bit different. And if you think about how Agile emerged, it was kind of like that, right? We need to bend the rules. We didn't want to develop software like everybody did.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit natural in here. But the movement with the name and big companies following that, I would say that it was the late 2000s, almost 2010. Then a lot of big companies really started to dive into that. But even now, we have some laggards, some companies that are just getting into it, some of the biggest companies of the country. But I would say it's between the year 2000 and 2010.
Okay. And what about Agile coaches and Scrum Masters? How does the community look like over there?
Oh, that's a great thing here. We have a nice community. It's a little bit centered in the Southeast in São Paulo, but we have a lot of good places in the Northeast, on the South, especially on the Amazon, the States. We had a lot of great companies doing Agile in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have plenty of different places with different cultures. We have like different countries inside Brazil, right? So
right
now that we have a lot of virtual meetings there's a lot of opportunity to exchange this kind of emergent practices that are being born in these companies. It's a great community, great community.
When you say the Amazon, you mean the original Amazon, right?
Yeah, yeah, not,
not the virtual warehouse, the one with the trees, the big river.
Very cool. So, you know, one of the things that I noticed right off, and we talked a little bit about this before, is you seem to have quite a big passion for training, particularly in Agile. Can you tell us a little bit about how you ended up as a trainer, how you went from like a developer into finding a passion for training?
Right. Actually, it was a surprise to me too. You know, both my parents are teachers, and I always told myself that I would never be a teacher because I saw what it looks like to be a teacher, right? And all of a sudden, I was just given classes. I think it started when I started my own company, and I had a lot of people that I need to guide in there. And then I started teaching programming patterns, programming lessons, and I just went into Agile. I remember the first class I gave was a CSD class in the Amazon forest, not the original Amazon. And it was a great class. I had a blast in there. I received the feedback that just clicked, and I said, okay, I want to do more of that. You know, that I saw that it can cause an impact on people's lives in such a short span of time. I want to repeat that. I don't have that feeling again. And then I just start doing it more.
That's awesome.
Cool. So, and what kind of training do you run?
Good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. I started with the CSD, more technical course, trying to help developers to develop in a better way, you know, trying to make them more collaborative, trying to make them learn how to deal with the product as a whole.
CSD, and that's Certified Scrum Developer?
Yeah, cool. That's that. And then I just started teaching Agile in general. So I have a lot of classes helping people to become Scrum Masters, become product owners, trying to understand Agile as a whole. To be a stakeholder in a product, how can I be a better stakeholder? What kind of practices can I add to my Agile portfolio? So I have a lot of this kind of classes, and now all of them are virtual.
Yeah. Can we stop for a second and talk about the CSD training? Because I don't think there's anyone in New Zealand, Joe, who's offering this course. And I remember
there must be, but I'm not aware of them.
Yeah. And I was very interested in actually running this training, but it never happened. So Mario, could you tell us what's maybe some of the details, so what's included in this training, or how do you run it? How long does it take? Tell us a bit more.
Yeah, great. It has two modalities. I can give a 3-day session training. Okay. And that's for people who already have a CSM, Certified Scrum Master, or a 5-day is a full course. And during these days, I try to first introduce Scrum and how it works, its basic concepts. And after that, we develop a project, which is a hangman game. That's my last class. I always change the project. The last one is the hangman game. And I try to help people to understand the hangman game as iterative and incremental product. So we start building a very simple hangman game, and then we start making it nicer and nicer, and we need to gather feedback. So we have people outside of the training. Sometimes I was in a hotel room, hall, and I just told the students, you need to get feedback. And they went to the staff of the hotel and asked them to play the hangman game and say what it.
That's so cool.
It's a very hands-on course, right? It's really, I love that course. It's my favorite.
So they actually do coding in the class?
Yeah, we do coding. That's awesome. Sometimes I have to change the course to adapt it to the language that people are using in a certain company. But I have it in Java, JavaScript, and Groovy. I think this that is the three of them. Maybe I guess I have one in Ruby too.
You know, it's really interesting, Mario, that I'm really, really happy that this CSD course, and yours sounds amazing as well, exists. But like, honestly, I don't see a lot of certifications in Agile for developers. Do you run into that as well in Brazil? And what, you know, do you have any ideas of why?
Yeah, I run into that in Brazil, in Portugal, everywhere. I was trying to open a class in South Africa and had the same problem. We have like two or three people enrolled, and those people, they enroll every time you open a class. And sometimes we need to cancel because we don't have a full class, and it makes no sense to run a class with such fewer students, because it's a group work, right? It's a teamwork. We need to have more people working there. I think it's the market. I think developers are looking for building technical excellence, trying to be better at whatever they're doing, like the language, the framework, the tools they're using, but they're not so interested in learning how to work with Scrum. Like, I have a Scrum Master, I have a product owner there, so they can do this stuff, and I can focus on my very technical stuff. I think the market is very, very competitive right now. So the developers, they don't need the certification to get a good job, right? So they can prove their work by just showing the portfolio, their GitHub, their GitLab. So they can prove they know what they're doing. And that's why I think they don't search for a certification in Scrum specifically.
There's lots of really good tests for developers as well that they can take in addition to the GitHub to sort of like test technical skill and thinking and that sort of thing. So, and that it can be done in real time, that it's really hard to do, like you said, for product owners, Scrum Masters. I mean, we can create like a scenario, but it's not as definitive as like looking at someone write code.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, I like the certifications because for me, when I see that someone is certified, what I see behind that badge is that you invested your time, maybe your money, I don't know, but at least your time you invested. You try to learn something new. And if you're that kind of person that are looking for knowledge, then you might be a good addition to our team. That's the way I try to see certifications, right? It's not about how much you know, but you're willing to know more. That's what I think the matters the most about a certification.
Isn't it ironic that the people who signed and created Agile Manifesto, they were developers, and now developers kind of are not interested in learning more about Agile and Scrum. That's amazing. Yeah.
Totally. That's something that it's a topic that we've been discussing on our last Agile Coach meeting here in Brazil, on a meetup. And just thinking about that, maybe a lot of companies just stepped into a second phase. You know, we solved basic problems, which were doing more tests, reducing technical debt, using continuous integration, working with pair programming. So we fixed these things and new problems just emerged. And we're now trying to fix those problems, and they're in another layer of the company. We're talking about managing problems, creating a meaningful purpose for the company, for the products they're building. But some companies are just skipping the first step, right? And there's a problem by doing that.
That's really interesting. And I think that also has sort of an add-on effect to what we see in New Zealand. I don't find a lot of Agile coaches who have a technical coaching capability. I mean, I used to be a developer way back in the day, but it's been so long ago that I wouldn't trust myself as a technical coach right now. I'd probably have to take about 6 months to reacclimate myself to that way of thinking. But honestly, most of the coaches, most of the Scrum Masters I meet are more on the people side of it, not on the technical excellence side, which is also where I see most of the organizations that I work with. And where they're good at tends to be relatively okay at communicating and realizing who we need, but not really great at the technical ability of like the CI/CD part, or there's this very low understanding from the business on the technical side. So like we're really good as the business communicating around needs of customer, but we're really bad in the business communicating around the technical needs to make that, to make our delivery strategy a reality.
That's also a great point of discussion, you know, because sometimes people try to make this fight against efficiency and efficacy or accuracy, right? And you need to strike a balance between the two of them, because if you find the right direction but you're not moving, then you still have a problem, right? You can't know if you're on the right direction if you're not moving. So you need to move. You need efficiency, but you also need to try to be more accurate about your destination. And when you focus just on one of them, then you have a problem. And I see that that's a common pattern right now. A lot of companies just focusing on the accuracy, trying to find the right direction, but moving too slow in that direction and not worrying about that.
It's like a siloed prioritization. Like it's good because they're prioritizing something, but they're doing it they're prioritizing only one half of the coin.
Perfect. I couldn't summarize that better. That's exactly what's happening right now.
And I wonder if it's not coming from almost misunderstanding of the first value from Agile Manifesto, which is individuals and interactions over processes and tools. And people just focus on individuals and interactions, which are hugely important, right? But they forget that it is not, the value is not individuals, interactions, no processes and tools. It says over. It says one is more important, but the other is also important, right?
Individuals and interactions at the expense of processes and tools.
Yeah.
That's interesting, Jacob, because I just remember a tweet I saw by Romeo, which is a great agile coach, and he was trying to explain what a value is. And he just said, okay, value is something that you're ready to be really, really, you need to fight about that, right? Willing to fight if that thing is not happening. And the way he reads, he says, the things on the right, you need to maximize those things, but you need to maximize them until they start to hurt the things on the left. So,
right. Interesting.
Right. That's a great way of trying to explain this concept, because a lot of people think that it's just, you know, beautiful versus ugly, good versus bad. That's not what the manifesto says.
No, not at all.
So since you, I mean, I really like how simple you make kind of very deep concepts, and you make them very conversational. You the way that you talk about your knowledge around Agile just leads to a lot of aha moments, even for someone, you know, like myself, who've been doing this for about a decade. I'm kind of wondering about like what your thoughts are on training, because you know, you've left your comfort zone as a developer. You've gone into a region outside of your comfort zone because your parents are teachers, and you're like, oh no, I'm starting to become a teacher. But you found a love for it. So I'm curious about like what makes good training in your book, and what makes, and where do you see, you know, you don't have to name names or anything, but like where do you see training go wrong? And what do you aim for when you're trying to make training go right?
Oh, that's a great deep question. I think that training it's kind of the same thing we do in Agile. You know, it's less about the output and more about the outcome. So for me, it's less about covering the topics I want to cover and more about seeing people really understanding and changing the way they behave on their company. So I tried, there's two things that happened in my training classes that kind of were a mark for me. The first one was that I was trying to explain a concept, trying to explain a technique, the five whys technique during a course. And I invented a story and I tried to draw the story on the flip chart. And after I finished, I shouldn't just ask to take a picture of my flip chart. And okay, go ahead, take a picture. And I looked at the flip chart and I was very, very embarrassed about the flip chart because it was ugly, it was terrible. And that was the memento the student was going to have about the training session. You know, that's what he was going to take back from what I did for him. And then it just struck me, okay, I need to learn how to draw better. So I changed the way I do my training because of this aha moment I had in there. The other one was a lot of repeated questions that I was having all the time. Every class, I need to answer the same questions. So, and it's boring sometimes when you just give the right answer to people, like, okay, so can the product owner be the same person as a Scrum Master? And you just say, yes or no, you can't. That's a bad thing. Why? Because that's a bad thing. And then you people just have to trust you, you know? Or even worse, you give that coaching answer, which is, it depends. And you don't answer the question at all.
So, which is honest, but not very useful.
Especially when people are paying for a course, right? They go there to search for answers, to search for a way they can change the way. And then just say, it depends. It doesn't help.
Yeah.
So I tried to build simulations so I could ask them the question and try to run those things both ways. So let's try to simulate what is a full-time product owner and what is a product owner that works in 2 or 3 projects. And then you tell me, what do you think that changed? And what is bad and what is good about that? So that's one thing that I see in training sessions that I really like to do is giving, promoting experiences. So not just telling, but asking and trying to see if I'm getting good answers. But then, because then I know that I had a great outcome and not just the output, just, okay, I just went for this topic, this another one, right?
Yeah, so is it how I like to approach trainings? I like to follow the principle of experience before explain. Is it something that you follow? So allowing the participants first to experience something before you explain the concepts.
Yeah, I love to do that. In a safe environment, right? Yeah. So they can fail, they can experiment.
Yes.
Yeah. And don't do that at their jobs.
Yeah. And have you ever, find that you need to design something to kind of make your point across? I know, an exercise or something that would help to do your trainings.
Yeah, I created this card game to simulate Scrum. And it was a very, very strange thing because I was locked in a hotel room in Portugal during a lot of time. It was a big trip. And I just had to keep my mind busy. So I started to design a game, to think about a card game. And I love card games, board games. So I'm really into that. And I do this game, it's called Scrunch King, which by the way is a terrible name because it's hard to read, hard to write, hard to speak.
Scrunchkin, that's S-C-R-U-M-C-H-K-I-N, Scrunchkin.
Yeah. You did it again, Joe. You're really good at it. but yeah, no, I guess you know Munchkin, right?
Yeah.
Munchkin, the game.
The game.
Yeah.
That's why you managed to spell the game.
Oh, so it does have like similar mechanics to it, but you play this card game and it simulates Scrum?
Yeah, it's something like that. There's one key mechanic I put in the game, which is every person on the team has 2 actions. So you have 2 actions, right? And actions are draw a card or play a card or something like that. And when I put someone on the team that just works half time, this person just gets 1 action. So let's say the product owner just have 1 action. So what happens in the game if I have like half a product owner? What happens is as the developers start delivering the feature there in the backlog becomes smaller and smaller and less refined until it becomes a real problem. So they can see there's a relation about how much time the product owner dedicates to the backlog and
That's
the size of
brilliant.
The team and the velocity of the team. So then I can ask them, so what happens? Is it a good idea? Is it bad every time? Or do you see it working on a very specific situation? So they can come up to with this answer without me telling them what the answer is.
So you've created this card deck. Can people buy this thing? Because I want it.
Yeah, there's people crazy enough to do that. But... Yeah, I the PDF is available for free. You know, I like to give back to the community because I learned a lot of the things that I created that I put into this game. I learned from the community, so I think that I need to give it back to as well. So yeah, you can download the PDF on the website, and you can buy the physical version on the website as well. It's a big game. It has I forgot how many cards it have, but I think it's 200 cards or something like that. It's a really big game.
And do we need the cards a card deck for each person on the team, or
no, a card deck for each team?
Oh,
so
okay.
Usually, nice. My training sessions I have like 20 people, so I usually use two or three decks to run a class.
Oh my gosh, I'm definitely checking this out, and we'll put a link for any of our listeners as well, because this sounds awesome, particularly on the product owner bit. Like, I'm always having to try to explain that conversation. It's like half a product owner is not really helping at all, and you've actually created a way to have that conversation without being with just letting them come to that conclusion so they can see it themselves. That's amazing.
And now, Joe, you can go to product owners. You can say, I don't want to have a conversation. Shall we play a game?
Yes.
And then you play a game.
Which is always my modus operandi.
Yeah. And
there's one thing that I like the most about the game is that you can create these functions, right? You can just mess with the deck and tamper with the deck and say, okay, I'm going to put the cards in this order because I want to simulate a very specific situation.
Oh, that's so cool. Hey, so... thank you for spending your time with us to let us know a little bit about Brazil, about what you've been doing in Brazil. You seem like a really creative person. Would you say that Brazil is full of a lot of creative people?
Yeah, definitely. We're here. People here are very, very creative. And I think that's why Agile is so natural for most of us. Mm. You know, it's easy to grasp. And that's why we can see a lot of Brazilian Agile coaches around the world. I don't know if you will have any in New Zealand that you know. But
yeah, I do.
I know one or two.
Yeah.
Hey, Bella. cool. And so, if I were gonna go work in Brazil, if I were gonna pick up from New Zealand, and say, hey, I want to go be an agile coach in Brazil. What's some advice that you would give me?
Well, the first one would be learn Portuguese.
Okay.
I think it's a big deal. It's a big deal. It's a great thing to do. Mm-hmm. Because apart from that, I think that your background with Agile in another place is great. Yeah, it's one of your greatest assets, you know, because you have a different context and then you can see problems through another angle and you can help people emerge with new kind of solutions from that. So I think you don't need anything else.
Just learn Portuguese.
You're ready. Yeah, just learn Portuguese. But you can do it after you come here. So you just need to buy a ticket.
Nice. What are the best attributes of Brazil as a country?
Well, I think at least my favorite, it's how social people are in here. So you can always rely on strangers. You know, the people, especially in my state. My state is very, very famous for that, for people. Here we have a saying that if you go to someone else's house and this person offers you a coffee and you refuse, it's offense. You don't do that. It doesn't matter if you don't want coffee, you drink the coffee.
So you have a lot of hyper people walking around.
Totally. So that's this warm feeling everywhere you go, you know, people are really embracing you and it's a really, really nice feeling. I think it's the greatest thing in here. So especially when you start working on a new company, you have a new team, you don't know anybody, it's easier to get around those people and to really become friends with them.
That's awesome.
That's very awesome.
And it's part of Agile, right? People.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the main part.
I've heard it's related to Agile.
Well, thank you very much, Mario, for taking the time to paint us a picture of Brazil, letting us know about the adventure that you're on, and sharing with us the card game you invented, of which I'm totally going to check out.
I'm eager to see you playing it and creating new dysfunctions, because I always like to use those dysfunctions.
Oh, we can create a lot of dysfunctions, right, Joe?
Oh, it's my specialty.
Thank you, Mario.
For just one last reminder. People are going to hate you when you facilitate a game session, right? Because every time they see a bad card, they're going to say, okay, that was Joe or Yeko. I knew it. So be prepared.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you, Mario. And thank you everyone for listening.